Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. 10 Americans who had been imprisoned in Venezuela are being returned to the U.S. part of a three-nation prisoner swap. Florida Congressman Carlos Jimenez.
Hats off to Secretary of State Marco Rubio for what he did and accomplished. And I know that the president of El Salvador was also very much involved in this deal.
In exchange, El Salvador agreed to release the 250 alleged Venezuelan gang members deported there by the United States. And tonight, the Trump administration says it will facilitate the return of former CICOT detainees from Venezuela to appear in court proceedings if required by a court. The Justice Department formally requested Friday the unsealing of grand jury records tied to the Epstein investigation. Many of President Trump's supporters have been calling for more transparency in that case. The expiration of end-of-year tax credits as well as new tariffs predicted to send health insurance premiums up as much as 75%, says a new analysis from KFF, a research group. This is ABC News.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The second half of the baseball season getting underway as the Brewers open a three-game series on the road against the Dodgers. Quinn Priester from Milwaukee against the Dodgers' Tyler Glasnow. At the start of the season, manager Pat Murphy was struggling to find starting pitchers. Now he's got Freddie Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, Jacob Mizorowski, Brewers catcher Eric Haas.
Yeah, I was joking with Murph about that, you know, to where we were to start, or we're just looking for innings anywhere we could find them. And we had a lot of young guys come up and throw some very meaningful and really good innings for us. And getting these guys back, we kind of planned to be in the clubhouse in the first place. You know, they haven't broken stride. They've joined us, and they've done nothing but put up zeros for us. They're a big factor with why we're winning.
NBA Damian Lillard agreeing to a three-year contract to return to Portland in a deal worth $42 million. He'll be joined by Drew Holiday, who the Bucks traded away 2 years ago to bring Lillard to Milwaukee. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. I had an interesting experience a couple of days ago. And it fits kind of into where we are right now with the passage of the big, horrible nightmare bill. I had a homeless guy who approached me in a parking lot. And look, I like a lot of these interactions, in a hurry, I'm on my way to something, mine's in another place, and I'm shocked by this person just, you know, there. And I always stop and at least listen. I want to talk to people, I want to know what's going on with folks. And this guy really, he stuck with me for the last couple of days. Because he was a guy who didn't complain. It wasn't, poor me. The guy was just trying to put his life back together. What had happened in our neighborhood is we had a pretty brutal storm. Swept through the town, trees down everywhere. And this guy who, his home was a tent tucked away in the woods, was just devastated. I mean, his everything that he owned, what few possessions this guy had, were just scattered and ruined. And so he approaches me, and you know, it's heartbreaking, because here's this guy who, you know, my general thing is I got a couple bucks in my pocket. I go, yeah, here, I'm really sorry. I hope this helps. And I hope other people will be generous as well, because I've always been a believer of, you know, we use government to do the things collectively we can't do individually. I cannot individually, you cannot, we cannot individually change this guy's path, future. It's probably not going to happen. There are a select few who can, but giving them the resources and the ability that most of us have, the best a lot of us can do is, here's a couple bucks. Oh, hey, here's a phone number. Hey, did you try this? And I did that. You know, I know people who run the shelters. I know people who work for different government agencies. And I said, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And he lifts up his shirt and he shows me that he's got a colostomy bag. And I'm like, geez, oh man, this poor guy. And he said, look, no homeless shelter will take me because of the medical necessity that they don't think they can handle. So they would rather leave me outside than allow me a night in a local shelter. Because, again, the phrase that he used was, they claim to be not medically equipped to handle me or house me. So as I said, I gave him what cash I had. Hopefully it was enough for a night in a hotel so that he could begin to get his life back together. And I got to tell you, the rest of the day, I was just kind of filled with guilt, anger, frustration. And look, honestly, I did what I could, but it's never enough. And this is where I come back to that frame of, you know, we do things through our government collectively to do the things that we cannot do individually. And I was pretty angry at our government in that moment, because, look, Republicans have been destroying the social safety net for decades. This goes back to Ronald Reagan and all the assault on the poor. But I keep coming back to, you know, this isn't just one guy. This happens to me quite frequently. Because I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to try. As I'm sure a lot of you are as well. And I just can't get past the sad reality that because of Reagan-era policies, because of politicians, Republicans, who have championed tax cuts for the rich and deregulation and privatization and all of these schemes, that, you know, we're where we are. And as we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity, we've left people like this guy out in the cold or in the heat to fend for themselves. And you go, well, but you're going to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. To a degree, yes. But what kind of civil society, what kind of civil society would do this to its citizens? And it got me thinking over the weekend again of another story much like this. We used to do these food drives where we would spend, you know, days, 10 days in a parking lot at a grocery store, raising money and awareness and food for the local food bank, for the shelter. And I met a guy who's, you know, look, he's part of my life now. His name was Joe, and Joe spent the entire 10 days in July when we did our Christmas in July fundraiser. And his story was like a lot of other working class people who fall on hard times. Oddly enough, a conservative Republican voter, you know, moderate conservative Republican, Reagan era, not crazy like today. But what you got was a guy who worked his entire life, every day, his entire life, and only to get sick. He had a heart attack, lost his job, ended up losing his health insurance, and ended up losing his place to live. Through Medicaid, paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to save this guy's life, only to send him out into the streets, only to push him out the door and live in the woods while giving him top quality medical care. It was just the weirdest, dumbest thing I've ever seen. But this is where we are. This is how crazy our policies are. And look, any one of us, and I remember, you know, talking to this guy, it could have been any one of us. Because all it takes is one illness, one accident. I'm living through it right now. You know, my wife's motorcycle accident has changed our lives in ways that I can't even begin to go into. And the safety net that I see is being torn apart. So here you have these folks who are the most desperate among us, being denied the most basic dignities to just go die in the woods, I guess. I can't help but be angry because we've made this political choice. We are the richest country in the history of the world. We are the richest country on this planet at its wealthiest moment. So to tell me we don't have money, can't help. There's money there. We've just made bad choices. We've made bad choices by lining the pockets of people like Elon Musk, who, if he wanted to end homelessness, could. Jeff Bezos could end childhood hunger. We could do this if we prioritized it. I find it really, really interesting that the Republicans who tell us how Christian they are, how much they love them some Jesus, are the ones who are literally taking food out of the mouths of children, are denying people health care, are kicking people to the curb to be homeless. And I know, we're told we can't rely on charity. Sorry. What can we do? These people, they don't want to work. It's disgraceful. It really is. Because in the richest country on the planet, nobody should have to beg for help. Which brings me to this monstrosity. Because, you know, this guy, he's alive because of Medicaid. He gets the treatments that he needs to stay alive so that he can live in the woods from Medicaid. Of which this nightmare of a bill is going to slash about $1 trillion over the next decade. About 12 million low-income and disabled Americans are going to lose care because, got to have work. This guy, not going to work. This guy, nobody's going to hire him, ever. Sorry. And look, this is, again, another one of those things. You know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, get a job, go to work. He doesn't have a house, doesn't have a home. And the weird thing is you go into these homeless shelters and those folks, they have jobs. Their jobs just don't pay enough to get a house. I know they're homeless or houseless, however you want to frame that. Because who knows what the justification by our Christian folk are. But I know as a country, we've made bad policy choices. And this latest nightmare of, you know, go get a job, but there aren't jobs out there for people because the private sector can't or more likely won't create enough. And with AI coming and the job losses that will come, this is going to be a nightmare for low-income workers. And as you delve into this bill, the 44% cut to HUD, which means housing and urban development programs are going to be slashed. They're the folks who build and maintain affordable housing, such as the Community Development Block Grant, the Home Investment Partnership Program. These things that, especially in rural communities, in low-income communities, and people with disabilities, people live on, need. You cut it by 44%, which means homelessness will rise, which means unemployment will rise, which means, and I guess there's part of me that goes, this is just, I don't know, the nicer way of going, yeah, we hope you all die. Because that's all I can come up with. The cruelty, obviously the point. But I step back from this and I'm like, you know, I don't know. And then you look at the fact that they've put limits on rental assistance. Federal rental assistance going to be converted into block grants. And we know what happens to state block grants. They get absorbed into other priorities, especially in red states. So that homelessness problem is going to get worse. And then folks like this guy I met who did get a couple of dollars from SNAP, those are all going to go away. They're cutting $300 billion from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what we used to call food stamps. And you go, but we're the richest country in the world. Feeding people's too far? Yeah. Feeding people in a lot of communities? Too far. And then you go down to the future investments, you know, the affordable housing initiatives that are there, the Fair Housing Initiatives programs, a lot of the stuff that was to help people like this guy with disabilities is going to be gone. So there's no lifeline. There's no hand up. There's only a boot to the back of the neck. And what's going to happen is states are going to have to make choices. And those choices in a lot of states are going to be, well, screw you. Sorry. Better luck next time. And oh, by the way, the Medicaid cuts are going to devastate rural hospitals. And we've been talking about this for a while. So none of this is new. There'll be a massive increase in uncompensated care, which means that people who do have insurance, even if you're not on Medicaid, you're going to get screwed by this. Because like, I've got great health care. If there's no hospital to go to, do I have great health care? And we've done all this. We've done all this. Well, not we. Republicans have done all this so that they could give tax cuts to the very wealthy. Massive handouts. That they could make permanent estate tax changes so that the wealthy can keep more. Does nothing to help the poor or disabled. No, doesn't have anything to help the working class. This is all about enriching, well, the wealthy. At the expense, this is Robin Hood in reverse. It is what it is. And I know I got a front row seat listening to people debate the, you know, there's good things in there, like the no tax on overtime or the no tax on tips. And you go, no, those aren't what they appear. And they're short term, 3 years. Those tax cuts for the wealthy, permanent. They ain't going away. Made sure of that. And the governor of the state that I live in here in Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, came and said, look, these cuts, we're not going to be able to absorb them. It means programs are going to get cut massively. Here in Pennsylvania, we've hit a record low of uninsured people, just over 7%. And now what they're talking about could make that enormously worse. Because understand, in this state, almost a quarter of the citizens rely on Medicaid. And you go, but Rick, you know, we got to feed the rich people. And the weird thing, again, to me, the weird thing is it's going to harm the people who voted for him the most. It's going to harm the folks who donned the red caps. And I know there are people out there saying, good, screw them. No, those are people's brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. Being stupid shouldn't be a death sentence. So for me, there's an opportunity. And I've been saying this for a while. There is an opportunity to do the right thing. There's an opportunity to move us in the right direction. Will we do it? That's the question. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Is this something we can possibly do? Is it something we should allow? Can we undo the damage? Will Democrats, if they take power in a year and a half, will they undo or try to undo the damage they've done? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We'll be right back. We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as you can tell, a little upset about this big, beautiful nightmare. And as all of us should be, honestly, quite frankly, everyone should be upset by what's going on. And I know, there's some sweeteners in there. There's some things they're going to be good. We've been hearing this, and this is the thing that's been bothering me. We've been hearing that line for decades. You know, if we just give the rich more, if we just give the rich enough, if we just give them more, if we just double, triple, quadruple down on trickle down, if we just keep, you know, fighting away for Reaganomics, it's going to work this time, promise, Scout's honor, this time it's going to work. Promise, I swear. And you stop and you think about, you know, where we are in this moment. It goes back to Ronald Reagan. It goes back to the Republicans, you know, being bought and sold by corporate America and the very wealthy. And look, Democrats came along a little bit later, but still somewhat along. But you stop and think about it and you go back to the Reagan years, because, you know, I remember growing up during those times. What you saw were massive tax breaks for the wealthy. When Reagan took office, the top marginal tax rate, and I know, hold your hat, because people not that old are going to freak out, it was 70% at the very top. He dropped the top marginal tax rate all the way down to 28%, which caused massive, massive deficits, massive debt, and put us on the path to where we are today. This is Reaganomics. This is supply side voodoo Reaganomics, for those old enough to remember George H.W. Bush's comments. And what'd we do? We gave it all to the wealthy. And what happened? Well, they were smart. Because I remember being told, these are smart people. They know what to do with the money. You know, and it'll trickle down. And the reality is, they are smart people. They do know what to do with money. They make more money for themselves, at the exclusion of everyone else. What also came parallel with tax cuts for the very wealthy were assaults on organized labor, firing the Patco workers, 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, not just fired, but banned from federal service for the entirety of their lives. This was a guy who full tilt boogie assault on collective bargaining. And what you saw is private sector employers saying, hey, it's open season. And thus the beginning of the end of a prosperous working class. You also saw, you know, if the two weren't bad enough, tax cuts for the rich, assaults on workers' ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. Well, we're going to deregulate. Deregulate the financial markets, deregulate corporations, make stock buybacks great again. 1982, the SEC under Reagan changed the rules to allow stock buybacks. And what have we been living under? Oh, yeah, no raises for you, worker who made us the profit. No, we're going to buy back our stock. Because thank you, Ronald Reagan. And the weird thing is, and this is the bizarre part, there were Democrats, Reagan Democrats, who were proud. Not as crazy as the MAGA red hat wearing kooks that I have to deal with a lot of times. But still, they were Reagan folk. So while Reagan was encouraging outsourcing and offshoring of jobs with his trade policies, deregulations, a high dollar policy, and all the other things that came along with it, while these Reagan Democrats were losing those manufacturing jobs, losing those high paying jobs that were going overseas. Well, you know, blame the others. And that's where we started. You know, you go through the Reagan era that cuts the Social Security. You know, cutting a social safety net, the stagnation of the minimum wage, weakening protections of OSHA and MSHA, and the same stuff. Attacks on affirmative action, attacks on anti-discrimination policies. And what do we have today? The difference was, during the Reagan era, it was black people. It was. You know, they were driving around in Cadillacs, drinking Dom Perignon, eating steak off your dime. We know that. We've all heard it. The welfare queen. The welfare queen wasn't a white woman living in a trailer park. No, no. She was a big black woman wearing a fur coat, driving a big Cadillac, living high off the hog. And yet they never found her. They could never find the quote-unquote welfare queen. It was, again, a creation of their imagination. Coming out of think tanks, get people upset, especially white people, because they're the one, we're working. Fast forward to today. What is it? It's not black people as much. It's brown people now. You know, they're living off your dime. They're taking your Social Security. They're living on Medicaid. They're getting thousands of dollars. Your hard-earned dollars they're taking. And my mind goes, yeah, it's true. It is your dollars, because the rich people aren't paying any taxes now. And they're quite, if you go on social media, you got rich people going, yeah, I'd be stupid to pay taxes. It kind of makes you wonder. And so when people ask, you know, how did we get here? Well, this was very, very predictable. This isn't for anyone who paid attention during the 80s into the 90s. Everyone knew. The difference was, is Democrats tried to convince themselves that, you know, well, you know, we can do what they're doing, just better. Which brought us the Clinton era. I have never been a Bill Clinton fan. Never was. The deregulation, the assaults on our safety net were softer. Sure. The Republican would have been worlds worse. Put a little lipstick on the pig, still sold it. And what did it do? It harmed a little less, but it still harmed. So as I look at this, this bill, not popular. This is an opportunity for Democrats to go, hey, you know what? Maybe, here's a thought. Maybe we can come up with some policies that are going to make workers' lives better. Maybe we're going to make real change. Because understand, this is the comment I've gotten from some friends, is that, you know, Republicans do all this really far out overreach stuff, and Democrats never do. Democrats are always accused of it, but they never actually do the full thing. They do half measures. The Affordable Care Act is a perfect example. Half measure. Affordable Care Act was the Heritage Foundation's answer to Hillary Care. Hillary Care, while complicated and the media ran all over it, was still a universal idea. Was still everyone gets it. Everyone's in. Everyone's participating. Everyone gets care. Still better in my view. Complicated, sure, a little bit. But ultimately better than what we've got. The most expensive health insurance, health care system in the world. And yet we don't get the best outcomes. So what does all this mean? I start off with a story about a homeless guy that made me angry. And for each one of us, I think we have to find that moment. What is that story? Is it meeting this homeless guy who I actually walked away from going, I wish I had that kind of spirit. Because at no point was this guy, oh, woe is me. He was upbeat. He was like, hey, I got to get this. I got to get moving. I got to get a tent. the kind of person that, the kind of mentality that you want to encourage, that you want to help. Now, I know I'm going to get a bunch of emails. Well, why did you do more? Because I'm one guy. This is why a government of, for, and by we the people can solve these problems. We can prioritize and fix these problems. The question is will we? Will we have our policymakers do things that are going to make lives better? And this is the call for Democrats. This is your moment. Your moment is right now. Your moment is to be able to step forward and say, I've got a plan. And that plan, I hope gets us power in 26. Quick break, right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms. Warm and muggy, lows in the mid-60s. Maybe an early shower, otherwise mostly cloudy for tomorrow with some late day sun, highs in the upper 70s. And more sun and again around 80 Sunday. It's 69 degrees right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I talked about the other day, you know, we've all had those moments where we have brushes with either being accused of being homeless or, you know, people who actually are. And my latest... and I talked about this extensively the other day. My latest brush with it was my wife just wanted to get a nap. And we were at the doctor's office, the doctor's facility, and there was a couch and she was laying down. That's all it was. We were just sitting there laying down and three times accosted by just people coming by going, what are you doing here? Do you live here? It was surreal. And to think that, you know, just average everyday working people have taken it upon themselves to really just harass people for no reason kind of gets me. But here's the thing. We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the Supreme Court deciding that being homeless is now can be criminal. And here to share some thoughts on what this last year has been like, I've asked Jesse Rabinowitz to come talk with us. Jesse's the campaign and communications director with Homeless Law, their website, homelesslaw.org. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick. As you mentioned, this Saturday is the 1 year anniversary of the Grants Pass decision when the Supreme Court said that cities and states and even the federal government are allowed to arrest, ticket, fine people experiencing homelessness for just being outside, even if they have nowhere else to go. And it's incredibly shameful. And the past year has proven how disastrous this decision has been.
Yeah, and to be honest, look, I've always been an advocate for sane laws to help homeless folks, to get, you know, people shelter, to get them jobs, to get the services and the things that they need. In fact, for a number of years, we used to do a Hungry and Homeless for the holiday event where we'd live in the supermarket parking lot to raise money, food, and awareness. But it's only been really recently that it hit me that someone accused me, and then all of the mechanisms of what's possible began to become apparent. Because look, my wife was in a near fatal motorcycle accident back in September. You know, we've been doing just all kinds of medical stuff, and her day's very long, and with a traumatic brain injury wants to rest all the time. And in this moment I was just like, is this what it's like? Is just average ordinary people, not even police or administrative folks, just average folks giving you a hard time? That's frightening to me, Jesse.
It's terrifying. We are seeing a complete erosion of any sort of empathy in this country. And we know that as we trend towards an autocratic regime, it's going to be people who are least sympathetic to the general public who are attacked first. And that's certainly trans folks and migrants, but that's also people experiencing homelessness. We have underestimated how much people in this country just hate homeless people. In the past year since the Grants Pass decision, we've seen 320 cities introduce laws that make it a crime to be homeless. And over 260 of them have passed. None of those laws help people. None of those laws fund housing or supports. All they do is make it easier to throw folks who are experiencing a crisis in jail because they can't afford to pay rent in a country where half of people struggle to get by. These aren't solutions. All they do is make homelessness worse and make it easier to kick people while they're down.
Yeah. I shared my story because look, I understand, had I thrown a stink, who knows what happens not in this day and age with, all of the rules that we now have in place for people being angry in public, let alone being homeless in public. Anything on your side, anything that you've seen personally on how this ruling has affected folks? Anything?
I've seen so much. I mean, two tragic stories come to mind. In California and in Georgia, we know of people experiencing homelessness who were actually killed when the government came to use backhoes and other heavy machinery to destroy their encampments. In Kentucky, where they have a billionaire-backed anti-homeless law, we saw a woman who was in active labor get cited for sleeping outside, for violating the camping ban. The police didn't offer to help her. They didn't actually believe she was in labor, and she gave birth to a healthy kiddo later that day. But can you imagine being in labor and being told here's a ticket by the very people who are supposed to help you? And for me, I was in Deschutes, Oregon in May, when the Trump administration evicted nearly 200 homeless folks from the National Forest by threatening them with $5,000 in fines or up to a year in jail, all because they were sleeping outside in a city, in a state, and in a country that has no housing that people can afford. These encampment evictions are incredibly expensive. They're deeply traumatic. And most importantly, they keep people homeless longer. I believe that all of us want to solve homelessness, maybe for different reasons, but I don't think anybody wants to see people living outside. But this focus on these backwards billionaire-backed laws actually make the problem worse. The only way we're going to solve homelessness is by connecting folks with housing and supports they need. And when we do that, we build communities that are healthier, that are more just, and that are more vibrant, and where everyone has the support they need to thrive.
I would like to agree with you. I really would. I'd like to agree that that not everyone wants to take any joy in people's misery. But I got to tell you, recently I look at my Republican friends and I look at the leadership there, and I got to tell you, I don't know. I used to believe we were a country that wouldn't let someone die on the street. I used to believe we were a country who believed at least somewhat the Christian nation rhetoric. You know, that guy that used to run around talking about feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and caring for the sick and the elderly. I used to kind of think we were that country. But I got to tell you, with over 200, I guess your numbers, with over 230 laws passed last year to criminalize homelessness, I don't know.
I do think these laws, and I know these laws, are deeply unpopular. In a recent survey from ACLU and YouGov, we see that over 70% of people from all parties, agree with us that we need housing, not handcuffs, and that throwing folks in jail or punishing them for being poor is not a good or effective solution. And although we have seen a tremendous amount of laws passed on the city level, we have seen nearly we've seen about 50 laws introduced on the state level that make it illegal to be homeless, and nearly 80% of those laws have been defeated. So when people are able to hear these stories about how these laws don't work and make homelessness worse, we can change things, we can make a difference. But people are so rooted in this belief that homelessness is a personal choice and a personal failing, and we have to do much better to educate people and help them understand that homelessness is caused by housing that's too expensive. And we know that for every $100 rent goes up, homelessness increases by 9%. Half of renters in this country struggle to pay rent. This isn't just about the 700,000 people who are sleeping outside right now. This is about the tens of millions of renters who are at risk of homelessness. And all of those statistics were before the White House and before the Republican Congress published their regressive, anti-poor, anti-worker budget. So we know that if this budget is allowed to pass, just like these anti-homeless laws, all they're going to do is hurt people and make more people homeless and keep them homeless longer.
Yeah, I've fought that battle here in my local community when we used to do our Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday events, because people have this idea of who the homeless are. They're all drug addicts and they're all lazy, and that's the narrative. But what I found, sadly, in our community, a lot of it was, a lot of folks struggling with mental illness. And when the state closed the state mental hospitals and gave people nowhere to go, they went to the streets and then ended up, you know, going in and out of the jails. But the other one, and the one that, you know, most people are surprised by, are working people. People who work in your fast food restaurants, looking at low-wage jobs. Folks who, the car broke down. And they lost everything. And it's really sad that we don't have a mechanism to help those folks.
Absolutely. To respond to many of those points, certainly the closing of mental health institutions contributed. But at the same time, the Reagan administration gutted tens of billions of dollars for housing. So at the same time as folks were being kicked out of mental institutions, we were seeing a historic erosion in housing that people needed. And unfortunately, it appears we're on track to hit another significant gutting of these social safety net programs. There's a new book out by a buddy, Brian Goldstone, called, I believe it's called There's No Place for Us, but I could be wrong. So,
you know, I have a friend who, she's written a number of books on she's one of the big homeless advocates that I know. And she said, you know, in her view, the number one reason that people end up homeless is a car repair more than $400. And you stop and you think about that. In this country, where an enormous percent of people are two paychecks away from disaster, to have a government that's now saying, if you do hit that road, that bump in the road, if you do end up in this crisis, we're going to lock you up instead of helping you. Just, I'm still stuck with that. I know I shouldn't be. I know I should be going, what's the solution? But I'm still stuck with that.
And this isn't new, right? The Supreme Court made it a lot easier for cities and states to throw people in jail for being homeless. But these anti-poor, anti-vagrant laws have been around since the foundation of this country.
Sure.
We just find new ways to punish people who are poor, but they don't work.
Like putting spikes on the wall and putting dividers on the park benches and all of that stuff designed to make someone whose life is already uncomfortable even more so. So let me ask you this. Are there any places that are doing things right, that are doing things well? Anything that you would say, hey, this is kind of the model of what we should be doing? All of this stuff over here that we've just been talking about, this is not the way to do it. Is there a way to go, hey, this is what we should be doing?
Nobody's doing it perfectly, but there are certainly cities that are doing a better job. Newark is a good example. Some cities in Texas, Austin is a good example of cities that have changed how zoning works so you can build more housing, and cities that are focusing on getting folks support and housing that they need. One good proof point of this is veterans homelessness. We have seen historic reductions in veterans homelessness across the country because the federal government put resources into it, which shows that homelessness is not some intractable problem. It's actually not rocket science. If you get someone housing and you get them support, they don't live outside anymore. But for most people, they don't have, there's not enough funding to go around. And that's even before these budget cuts come down the pipe. But I saw it in DC where I was a homeless street outreach worker, that when folks got housing, they got better. They lived inside, they had an apartment, they went to the doctor, they reconnected with family. Their lives improved, and the lives of the community improves too, because everyone is healthier when we're all healthier. But unfortunately, it seems that the only thing that politicians can think of right now is throwing people in jail. And it just doesn't work. So we're really excited. 11 states have introduced a version of the Gloria Johnson Act, named after the same Gloria Johnson from the Johnson versus Grants past Supreme Court case. And this legislation says cities can't arrest, ticket, or otherwise criminalize homeless people unless they give them an adequate, decent place to go. And next week, this law is going to be introduced in Congress by Representative Jay Pollenfrost, called the Housing Not Handcuffed Act. And we hope this jumpstarts the conversation and forces elected officials to refocus on real solutions to homelessness, like housing and support, because we know housing is too expensive for most people in this country. And until we address the fact that right now housing is treated as a commodity that rich people can use to get richer instead of something that we all need, we're going to keep having people living outside, and we're going to keep having millions of people one paycheck away from homelessness. But it doesn't need to be like that. We can solve homelessness, and we can actually have a country where everyone has housing that meets their needs. And when we do that, we're going to be a safer, healthier, and more just community.
Yeah, as we found out during the pandemic, there's a way to end childhood poverty. Give parents money. There's a way of doing this. We've just chosen not to. In fact, we could easily solve these problems, but again, we've chosen to enrich a minority of folks in this country, our billionaire class, and we're doing it again with this big, beautiful nightmare of a budget bill that they're going to ram through. They're going to cut Medicaid. They're going to cut into Medicare. They're going to go after taking. They're going to take food out of the mouths of children so that we can give massive tax cuts that never, let me repeat, never trickle down. But those are the priorities.
And it's all connected, right? There's a billionaire named Joe Lonsdale out of Austin, Texas, who made his billions at Palantir selling facial recognition technology to ICE and the government to deport migrants. And Joe Lonsdale started a think tank called the Cicero Institute, based out of Austin, which is peddling these racist, backwards, anti-homeless bills in states across the country. He is friends with Elon Musk, he is friends with J.D. Vance, he is friends with Peter Thiel, and he had a meeting at the White House a few weeks ago. These billionaires are the same people behind these budget cuts are behind this push to make it illegal to be homeless. And we are very clear that we need housing and support, not tax cuts for the rich and handcuffs for the poor, because most people are so much closer to sleeping outside than they are to becoming a millionaire like Elon Musk or his friend Joe Lonsdale.
No, it's an excellent point. And I go back to, you know, my high school civics teacher, when I asked him, how do you know which party that you're going to align with? And his answer was, you know, all these years later, still spot on. You know, Republicans are for big business, the very wealthy, limited government. They're not going to do much for you, but they're not going to be always too deep in your pocket. Democrats are for, you know, big government, big social programs for the poor, and you folks in the middle, you're going to pay for both. So decide which one you're closer to. And I find that to be, you know, as I get older, an excellent explanation.
And the Democrats have not been good on this issue, right? I was out there when Joe Biden and his National Park Service evicted about 50 homeless folks from the McPherson Square Park in D.C. The Biden administration was not good on the criminalization of homelessness. And we see, you know, Gavin Newsom out in California, who is positioning himself as the anti-Trump and is certainly doing a good job responding to ICE, but he's actually taking the same pages from the Trump playbook to respond to homelessness by encouraging cities to make it illegal to be homeless. We need a political system that works for the many and not for the few. And instead, we see politicians of both parties passing these laws that make homelessness worse at a time where more and more people across the country of all parties and of no party struggle to pay rent. The lack of affordable housing is, in my mind, the biggest driver both of inequality, but also of hardship for most people in this country. Yet politicians are not talking about it in ways that they should. I wonder what a campaign might look like if they focused on ensuring that everybody had a safe place to live.
No,
I think that would be a galvanizing political campaign.
And ensuring that, you know, people don't, when they lose their job, don't end up homeless, their standard of living doesn't fall, that we have a reasonable living wage, that we have health insurance and education for our children, all of these things. I wish there was a party that really focused on that wholeheartedly. Lastly, I want to talk about the Housing Not Handcuffs Act. What outside of saying that you can't criminalize homelessness, You know, what else does this do? Or is that just it? We're just saying you can't criminalize it. Is there anything to help, you know, move in a policy direction? Is there a way to help, you know, funding for states to do things, anything?
Yeah, so this bill is introduced in direct response to the Supreme Court ruling last year, and it's very simple. It says federal agencies can't criminalize homelessness. That's it. It's very simple. It doesn't impact what states can do, although states are introducing similar versions of the same legislation. But you're right, this bill in and of itself isn't going to solve homelessness. So we're hoping what happened in Miami happens across the country. There was a federal ruling that said Miami couldn't throw folks in jail for experiencing homelessness. And Miami, because they still were a tourist district and wanted people to come downtown, decided, well, if we can't throw folks in jail, we got to do something. And they expanded the supply of housing and shelter, and they reduced homelessness by half. That's what we want cities and states to do. Unfortunately, the consent decree that was prompting Miami's action expired. They went back to throwing folks in jail, and homelessness went back up. So we see, again, these things don't work. But if politicians don't want to see folks living outside, the only way they're going to meaningfully address homelessness is by funding housing and support. And that needs to happen at the city, state, and federal level. Unfortunately, for the first time ever, we have a HUD secretary who's asking for the funding for affordable housing to be cut. That's not going to help anybody. All that's going to do is to create more people experiencing homelessness and place this burden further on cities and states who are already strapped and already struggling with the demands that they're met with. We have to fundamentally change how we do housing in this country. Housing should not be something that you can only afford if you're wealthy. Housing is a basic human need. We all need a place to sleep. We all need a place to wash up. And when we ensure that everyone has the housing that they need, we are healthier, we are safer, and we're better for it.
There you go. Jesse, I appreciate you taking some time for us, explaining and walking me through all this. I appreciate it. Hope you'll come back if and when this bill passes, and keep us up to date on what's going on.
Absolutely. And check out our website, housing.handcuffs.org. We're going to have a bunch of information about the Housing Not Handcuffed Act up in a few days, so folks should tune in and check it out. Thank you so much, Rick.
I appreciate your time, Jesse. Jesse Rabinowitz, Campaign and Communications Director there at Homeless Law. Check out their website, homelesslaw.org. Want to hear your thoughts. Have you experienced homelessness? Have you been harassed, intimidated, any of that? I want to hear the stories. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1971. At 2:51 a.m., Battalion 12 Chief Leo Najarian of Los Angeles heard that there had been a tunnel explosion. That February, a 6.5 earthquake had killed 65 people in the area. Now it seemed tragedy had struck again. Just the night before, Chief Najarian had been called out to the same address. The Lockheed Shipbuilding and Construction Company was digging a tunnel over a mile long for the Metropolitan Water District. Chief Najarian had been called out when four workers were injured due to a minor explosion. He had found that the workers at the site were not testing frequently enough for methane gas. One spark from a tool could touch off an explosion. Leaving instructions to test more frequently, he left and spent the next day worried. So when another explosion alarm came from the same address, he rushed to the scene. There he found the second explosion was much worse than the first. Workers were trapped 5 miles into the tunnel. Rescue workers attempted to reach the trapped miners through a vent shaft near their position. Paul Badgley, a miner at the scene, was part of four rescue attempts. He described the heartbreaking effort, stating, quote, "The first time we went in there, I could hear the guys hollering for help. The third and fourth time, I couldn't hear them. It's a hell of a feeling not being able to help them when you hear them hollering." 17 workers lost their lives. In the aftermath of the tragedy, the Lockheed Company was put on trial and fined heavily for their negligence. California passed stricter mining and tunnel laws and established a state occupational safety and health administration. 19 Los Angeles firefighters were awarded the Medal of Valor for their bravery. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter @laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, honestly, that communities across this country are trying to criminalize the downtrodden. I mean, that's the part that gets me, and I guess it goes back to my religious upbringing. I grew up in the Catholic Church in the 70s, where peace and social justice were still the focus. We hadn't gotten to greed and abortion yet, they were greedy. Let's not get carried away. But you know, the idea of helping in the community of not allowing laws to be passed to criminalize people who are we're kicking people while they're down. That's basically what we're doing. And understand, homelessness shouldn't be a crime. It's a crisis rooted in our systematic failure to address anything that we, the people, need. And instead of what we're getting from a lot of my Republican friends, especially, is, and look, there are Democrats who are just as heartless because, hey, got to stay in office. And it's, you know, we don't want those unsightly people. We should be doing something positive. And I've been saying for years, you know, we've got to be investing in affordable housing. There's no reason that you can't have housing developments for working poor and working class people. We build these giant McMansions, we build these huge developments, and what do we get? Nothing for poor people. No moderately sized little bungalows like my grandparents' generation built. So what we need is we need to build affordable housing. And that can only happen through government programs. Understand, you know, you look at the fabulous 40s and 50s and into the 60s, that was built off of government investment, massive amounts. So we need to invest in housing. Absolutely. Expand rental assistance, emergency shelters, supportive housing. You know, in Denver, as I remember, they've got an old warehouse that they turned into a living facility for people who have little rooms, and they're all the support services you need. There's a gym. There's all kinds of stuff to deal with people where they are. But we need more than just temporary solutions. We need actual housing. And this is where I thought Kamala Harris, you know, made a mistake in going, oh, we're going to give people $25,000 to buy a house, their first-time home buyers. No, that's, again, easily divided. I was like, build houses and put people in them. We've got to have policies that are going to help heal our communities. And that starts with jobs. That starts with, if the private sector can't or more likely won't create enough reasonable paying jobs, the kind of jobs that you can live on, then the public sector has to. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done. There's a lot in the care economy we should be doing, that you could pay people to make a living, to be able to put food on the table, keep a roof over their heads, and not end up homeless. But we're not going to do that because there's no profit in it. And that's the sad reality. We've been sold on the idea that greed is good and the one who dies with the most toys wins. And the sad reality is it's never us. It's never the working class that gets the most toys. We're the ones who pay for it. And for me, in this moment, I'm disgusted by what I see coming out of Washington. And I hope other people are looking at Republicans, you know, the family values people, the Christian folk. And what they're doing is, well, immoral, unethical, wrong. Throw the word in there. I thought that they stood for something. I know. You got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? Isn't that the argument they make? It's disgraceful what they're doing. And they should be called out on it. It should be one of these scenarios where we're talking to people and saying, look at these folks. Look at how immoral they are. Shame. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Do you have an idea? Is there somewhere in your community that's doing it right? I've seen some places with those little tiny homes. It looks cool as you know what. I'd love to hear it. Are there things out there that we could be passing along as best practices? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Sirens during a procession in Los Angeles for three sheriff's deputies who died in an explosion at a law enforcement training center today. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna says the three who died had 74 years of experience between them.
Usually, the average calls that they go to in dealing with some very dangerous situations or items average about 1,100 per year. So these aren't people who don't do this very often. They are fantastic experts.
And we learned that the sheriff's department is searching the home where the possible device that exploded may have come from. 10 Americans that had been detained in Venezuela coming home as part of a prisoner exchange. In return, El Salvador is releasing more than 250 Venezuelan migrants that were deported by the U.S. and held in the maximum security C-Cut prison. 17-year-old charged in Maine with the murder and death of a paddleboarder who went missing on a rural pond. This is ABC News. Top leaders.